One of the issues that I think we have in trying to approach tshuva, one of the things that hampers us in trying to do tshuva, is we have a difficulty in relating to the numerous chazal which talk about or give a parable about a king. Just this morning at the Hashkama Minyan, my Dvar Torah revolved around a chazal, a medrash that talked about a king and a king judging people and so on and so forth. We don't have a king. I don't know a king. I have no relationship to a king. In fact, even the leaders that we have, they make fun of themselves. There's the Queen of England, who we can't relate to this. Absolute power. All these mashalim that we see in Chazal, I'm not saying the Chazal are not timeless. Of course they are. But I'm talking about our relationship, our relating to these Chazal are very difficult. What about, I have no idea about a king. In addition to that, there is a famous idea by the Kutzker Rebbe. The Kutzker Rebbe was once asked, how do I understand or how do I relate to fear of Hashem, Yiras Hashem? So the Kutzker Rebbe said, imagine you're in a forest, you're walking in a forest, and all of a sudden a lion comes out of nowhere, is about to pounce on you. So that should be the fear, the same type of fear. That's the fear you're supposed to have of Hashem. Now, I don't know about you, but my wife and I, we like to take the kids to the Santa Barbara Zoo. Ever go to the Santa Barbara Zoo? Now, the Santa Barbara Zoo, a really nice zoo. It's not too much to handle. But you go to the Santa Barbara Zoo, and you go around, and you see they have a lion. It's a really wimpy lion. It's an old lion. It could barely move. So, you know, I don't think that lion could even jump at me. So I'm supposed to imagine my Yiras Hashem, my fear of Hashem, centers around that lion? I can't imagine it. So basically, I'm saying that, like the Berditchev Rebbe, as you all know, one of the famous personalities in Jewish history, recent Jewish history, if you want to call it that, always used to see when someone was doing something that seemingly seemed to be not so appropriate, the Berditchev Rebbe had a way to turn it around and say, see, look how great Klal Yisrael is. And somehow the Berditchev Rebbe would be the type of personality who would be the great defense attorney for Klal Yisrael. So in a similar way, I think we have a defense. Because how are we supposed to relate to all these wonderful chazal? We talk about a king, talk about a lion, and no king, no lion. So how am I supposed to do tshuva? I can't relate to these chazal. So a number of years ago, I saw Rav Volbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was bothered by this idea. And he used the concept of Shechinta deGalusa, that we have to understand that Hashem's Shechina is in exile. So Rav Volbe, who went through the war, he related it to, during the war, there were many shadow governments, governments in exile, like the French government in exile with de Gaulle. So we should feel the same way with Hashem. Hashem's Shechina, Hashem's divine presence, is in exile. So that's the way we relate to it. We don't have any governments in exile. What is that supposed to mean? We have people running for president, so we have Governor Perry and Governor Romney. So how are we supposed to understand that? Them? How are they supposed to be an assistance to me to understand what's going on in the world of Hashem? So I think maybe a possible avenue for us to get over this is a Musar idea. Very important Musar idea. Those of you who learn Musar know the concept of a Tzir Chushi. A Tzir Chushi is a graphic visual imagery. Imagining something in your mind very clearly and very graphically. I remember many years ago when I was single, so I remember we had a Musar group, and Rabbi Moshe Dov Harris was giving that Musar group. And I remember, I don't remember the topic, I don't remember, but I remember where I was. Because Rabbi Harris was graphically, vividly illustrating, depicting a tsirkushi of a person being buried. Imagine that. Imagine you're that person being buried. Some people have a custom, there's a poem, I'll call that, a poem of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. It's in the form of an aleph beis, and it is a poem about what happens to a person when they die. What is done by a chevra kedisha physically to a person when they pass away. It's a very strong poem. It's not for the faint of heart. These are a tzir chushi, a clear imagery. And this is a musar tool. Tzir, an imagery, chushi, that's supposed to get into your being emotionally. That you learn a musar idea, you take it in with a vivid, clear imagery. So I think that maybe what we have to do today is use a tzir chushi using the imagery of technology. A tzir chushi from technology, which is all around us. Now, I have to tell you, this is not my novel idea. I stole it. And I stole it from a very good source. And I stole it from the Chofetz Chaim. The story is told that when movies came out, so the Chofetz Chaim said that it's an amazing thing, because all the time throughout history, we've been talking about that when a person passes away, so they'll have to give a din and a cheshbon. Din and a cheshbon, they're going to have to give an accounting in front of Hashem for everything they did. A din, the simple explanation is, you know, you did something wrong, so they're going to ask you, why did you do this? Why did you do that? A cheshbon, there's different explanations, but a cheshbon, many explain, is during that time you were doing that avera, during that time that you were playing Angry Birds, you could have been doing a mitzvah. You could have been doing something else. So you're wasting your time doing that. You could have been doing something more constructive. That's a din of a cheshbon. So they say that when the movies came out, the Chofetz Chaim said, see, this is what it is. Person passes away. What do? They pull out the reel-to-reel, and they play back your life on the screen. And you have to account to it. Why did you do that? Why did you do this? But Hashem's movie is much better, besides the color and the technical. But also, it will play back your intent, your kavana, your motivations behind something. That's really amazing. But the Chofetz Chaim said that use movies as a way, a tzir chushi, imagery. Wow, you know, they have a movie, and it plays back something over and over again. They could do that in Shemayim with you. Take out the DVD, plug it into, slip it into a drive, and there it goes. Explain, why did you do that? How did you do that? So I was thinking that maybe we could apply that to our lives and various things that we have in technology today, which will give us lessons, modern day lions, modern day kings, so that we can learn lessons, a tzir chushi, this vivid imagery that we can understand maybe how to do tshuva in certain areas. So as you could see, the first area which I thought maybe could give us a very interesting lesson is email. Email, did you ever, I'm sure you did, because I've done it many times. Did you ever send an email and regret, you hit the send button and then you say, why did I send that? I shouldn't have sent that. That was, either you didn't write it right or you shouldn't have sent it. You shouldn't have sent it, but it's gone. You can't get it back. There's no way you can't get it back. It's gone. It's out there. It's gone. So I was thinking, on Sunday mornings, I have the distinct pleasure to learn with my son Avrami. We learn Shaar Gemul by the Ramban. And the Ramban, at a certain point, discusses this idea that when you do something, so it's done. There's an act that you created. That act is out there, so to speak. And there's going to be consequences for that act. And therefore you have to realize that there are consequences for what we do. Everything we do. It's once you send that send button, it's out there. So we're accustomed to the concept of tshuva. We take it for granted. Yeah, so I do this avera, and you know, I'll come around and I'll wipe it away. But it's not so simple. We know that was something that Hashem created. wipe away something that was done already? Try doing that. You send a nasty email to a boss. So what, are you going to come up to him the next morning and say, I didn't really send it. No, he knows it's your computer. He could trace it. What, it's not there? Of course it's there. How are you going to explain that? You have to explain that. So too with us in Hashem. Once you hit that send button, you do something, it's there. You created something. It has ramification, it has effect. The second thing I was thinking of is the area of smartphones. Smartphones are amazing. So we all know one of the effects of a smartphone is everyone's a journalist. Everyone's a journalist. So you know what's been, it happens almost every week. There's some celebrity, some athlete, somebody, a politician, right? And they do something and they think they're b'chedrei chadarim. They think they're in a private place, they're in a party, they're in somebody's house, or there's something. And they think nobody sees. But somebody, everybody there has a smartphone. So you hit the app that and record it, and you take a video of that person, and all of a sudden it's viral, it's all over the place. Person's ruined. Person's ruined. So too with us. As I mentioned before, we have to realize everything is recorded. Everything is recorded. You can't hide. There's nowhere to hide. That's what one of the things that smartphone teaches us. Everything's being recorded. Everything's being viewed. Everything's being seen by Hashem. That's what a smartphone should be teaching us. Lesson number 3, downloading. I have the incredible merit to have a very close friend. You might have heard of him, Rabbi Shlomo Ra'anan. Rabbi Shlomo Ra'anan is the head of an organization called Ayelet HaShachar in Israel. Amazing organization. He goes to non-religious kibbutzim, and he and one other guy, usually they go for Yom Kippur, they take a room. We're not proselytizing, we're not pushing anything. And amazing, people gravitate to them. And you see a video that right before Yom Kippur, they're going into a room that was given by this kibbutz. They're starting to dive in there. All of a sudden, women start coming. They light candles before Yom Kippur. And then you see at the end of Yom Kippur, they have hundreds of people there. And they're singing all together, Lashon Rabba Yerushalayim. And he's been successful, and he should hopefully continue to do so, that he has many of his colleagues in non-religious kibbutzim, non-religious moshavim, places where there have been missionaries, and one person, one of his colleagues goes there, changes around the whole place. When my wife and I were in Israel a couple years ago, so Shlomo picked us up, and he showed us around. We went to a moshav, 50 families in this moshav, and there was missionaries there doing tremendous damage. All of a sudden, they sent one guy there, we met the guy, the nicest, sweetest guy, Zeus, and he's constantly smiling. Out of the 50 families, the missionaries are gone, and out of the 50 families, 30 of them are Shomer Shabbos now. Amazing, absolutely amazing. So Shlomo, through his wonderful organization, they send out videos. So one of the videos that they produced was a very wonderful video about koshering a house for Pesach. Very cute video. And it has a guy who's not religious and gets up in the morning, goes, and there's a note from his wife, and the note says, you know, normally for Pesach we go to my mother's house, but the wife writes that my mother is sick this year, so we have to, instead of us going to her, she's coming to us. One problem. You have to cash the house for Pesach. He flips out. The husband flips out. I don't believe in Pesach. I don't know any of the halachas. He gets on the phone, calls his wife, says, "What? Come on, what do you, there's work to be done. I don't believe in it at all." To make a long story short, the doorbell rings, you know what it is, and so a Hasidish guy who's collecting kimcha de Pesach. He's coming to get money for people for Pesach. So he gives him a donation, he closes the door in his face, and then turns around and says, maybe this guy could help me kosher the kitchen. Brings him in, happens to be the guy's a mashgiach, and he helps him, and and they become friends, and the non-religious guy believes and gets all, and he's being more machmir, he's being more stringent about cleaning the house than the mashgiach, and the mashgiach has to cool him down, although, you know, you're doing too much, stop already. A very nice video. So, for a few years already, I've been using this in school. In Beis Yaakov in Los Angeles, where I teach the halachas of Yoredeya, well, not Yoredeya, but about kashrus. And so we talk about kashering vessels, well, if they come treif or chametz, whatever the case may be. So I show the girls the video. So there was just one problem. Video's in Hebrew. So some of the students are Hebrew challenged. So a few months ago, before this past Pesach, so Ayala HaShachar came out with a new video, but it was the same video, but with English subtitles. That's fantastic. So I emailed Shlomo and I said, I need this video. You know, I use this video for my class. I need this video. I need the subtitles. So his tech support people are sending me the video, trying to open it. I can't open it. I'm trying again to open it. They send me another one. Can't open it. So finally, I got frustrated and I went online and I found this software which says it could open any program. Any program. And I downloaded it. Now, you know that's a problem, right? If you have to download something and the download is for free, so you should suspect that there's something wrong. And indeed, when I downloaded that program, so all of a sudden, every time when I opened up my computer, started running Windows, a thing popped up. Deal Runner, the Matzia for the day, right? A thousand pounds of pistachios for a dollar, right? You know, so one of these things. Really annoying. Really super annoying. So I had to get rid of it. I didn't know how to get rid of it. So thanks to Menachem Green, he gave me a software, which I was careful when I downloaded it. He told me what to click yes and what to click no. And I got rid of Deal Runner. Baruch Hashem, I got rid of it. But it was a big pain. It was a really big pain. It messed up my hard drive. It really did. So I was lucky. You know, my download wasn't so bad. But some people we know, they download things, and they're viruses, and there's Trojan horses, and there's all sorts of things, and totally obliterates their hard drive. One of the people in the show told me that that's what happened to them. They download something, and the whole hard drive went bluey. We have to realize that's a very important concept. Downloading things is a very important concept for us to understand tshuva. Because in our society today, we live in America and we live in Hollywood. We live in Hollywood, the media capital, the entertainment capital of the world. We are constantly bombarded by downloads. Things we see, things we observe, things we hear, all these sorts of things. And we think it has no effect on us. It has a tremendous effect on us. A very powerful effect on us. And the same way it's hard to get rid of from your hard drive, it's also very difficult to get out of your mind. Very difficult. So we have to learn from this lesson of downloading. What do we download? What do we take in? Philosophies, images, ideas, Lashon Hara. The fourth lesson I think we could glean from technology is texting. The Maseilas Yesharim says that Paro was like the embodiment of the Yetzer Hara, one and the same. So we know what happened. Moshe and Aaron go to Paro and say, "Let my people go." So what's Paro's response? Paro's cunning, genius, diabolical. What does Paro answer? Paro answers, "Tichaber havola al anashim v'yasu asa." Make the bondage, the work, bigger, more intensified, more intensified. Why? Why was that the answer? So the Maseilas Yesharim says, because Paro realized if the Jews are coming and say, "Let us out," that means they had a chance to think. They had a chance to think. In other words, they had a chance to think. So you know what? It isn't so good here. It's not so good here. We got to get out of here. So if they felt that way, that means they had a chance to think. How do we undo that? Stop them from thinking. Stop them from thinking. So if we ratchet up the workload, they'll be too busy, and this is indeed what happened. And then they won't be able to think anymore. Ratchet up the work. That's the answer. And that was the answer. And if it wasn't for Hashem getting us out through blood and frogs and all those wonderful things, we would never have gotten out. That was a proper way of looking at it. And therefore, the Mesil Sesharim says that we need opportunities to think. This is one of the positive results of studying Musar. We all know one of the ideas of studying Musar is you have 10 minutes a day. You just close the world out. You have an opportunity to think. Most people don't have an opportunity to think. There's an organization, Rabbi Wallenstein is trying to start in a couple days from now, disconnect. Totally disconnect. Turn everything off. Speak to your friends, speak to your family. We don't have an opportunity to think anymore. And one of the reasons is texting. Ready for this? I saw an amazing study, it was just a few months ago. The average American teenager texts 3,176 times per month. 3,176 times a month. Figure that out. It's like 100 times a day. My thumbs can't move that fast. Now, you're not going to believe this, but it's really true. You can ask Avrami. We had a family gathering. We had one of our relatives in our family told us about a relative of hers, a girl, who in 1 month texted 10,000 times. In 1 month. Believe it or not, that was over the unlimited. The phone company got her father because she went over the unlimited limit. She went past unlimited. 10,000 times a day. Oh, a month. 10,000 times a month. Could you imagine a person like that? It's unfathomable. Somebody like that, a kid, a teenager, could that teenager think? Do you have a moment to think? You're constantly answering. Really? It's impossible. But that, there are people like that. When do you have a chance to think? That's what the Yetzer Hara does. We don't have a moment to think. That is one of the major problems that we have. A chance to think and introspect, the Mesil Sesharim says. A moment to think, like, what am I doing? Where am I headed in life? We don't have a moment. And texting is a major stumbling block in that area. A few months ago, lesson number five, a few months ago, I went to New York. And I was officiating at Kamas Matseva, a unveiling from my uncle. So being the family rabbi, I flew out to New York. So it's an amazing concept, which I'm not going to get into right now. But we fly cross country in one day. So I flew there, took the red eye, landed in the morning, went to Bela's house for breakfast, then off to the cemetery, family lunch, flew back. Within a day. Transcon, right? Time zones, no problem. Distances, no problem. You're there in a few hours, you're back. Nobody even knew I was gone. So when I was boarding the flight, it hit me. You know, when you board a flight, what do? You have a boarding pass. And what do you have? Yeah, on the boarding pass, there's a barcode. A barcode. So I present the barcode to the, they used to call them stewardesses, but flight attendant. And she scans it. She says, okay, Mr. Summers, go ahead. How does she know I'm Mr. Summers? And my whole life is on those barcodes. Everything is there. It's all there. Now, you know, with a barcode, if one line is a micromillimeter, I mean, infinite, a hair's breadth wider than it should be, I wouldn't have gone on that flight. Amazing. One little change in one little line makes a whole big difference. Huge difference. I'm not Mr. Summers anymore. I'm Mr. Schwartz, or I'm nothing. I'm non-existent. I think the lesson from that is that we have to realize everything's important. A little change One little thing can make a huge difference. We have a moment. We have a moment of time. So in America today, we kill time. So one of my rabbeim, Rabbi Chait, used to say, that's the worst thing. Kill time. Time is so precious. It's the most precious thing we have. We kill time. And what could you do in 30 seconds? You could say hello to someone. You could smile to someone. You could call up somebody who maybe is ill. You could do a tremendous mess, but you never know how you could revive a person. Studying Torah. So the Vilna Gaon, the Chofetz Chaim, says every word of Torah we study is another mitzvah. So 30 seconds. So let's say 30 seconds, you learn 30 words in 30 seconds. That's 30 mitzvahs. Huge. Huge. That one little micro line can make a world of difference. Huge difference. I think that's something that we have to learn from barcodes. Lesson number 6. A month ago, in September, some of you probably remember, it was a major blackout. Major blackout. All San Diego, parts of Arizona, Orange County, and some of Mexico blacked out. Blacked out. I called a friend of mine, Rabbi Letterman. He's a mechanic in San Diego, does wonderful work. And I called him, a friend of mine, and I said, you know, Baruch, how are you doing? He said, no, it's refrigerator. We have to keep our refrigerator closed. We have to, because there's no, in fact, he was a little worried because I was hacking him a Chinook, and, you know, there was no way for him to recharge his cell phone. His cell phone's going to run out of juice. Now what does he do? So I realized I better get off the phone with him. Major blackout. Millions of people. You know why that happened? Because there's a guy, a maintenance worker at a power station in Yuma, Arizona, who was doing regular maintenance and pulled out one small part in the power station in Yuma, Arizona. It shorted out that power, that distributing station, cascaded through all the entire grid, blacked out millions of people. Blacked out millions of people. I felt bad for that guy. Imagine the millions of people blacked out, the damage done. People can't work, people can't use their computers, people can't use their phones, people, because it's one guy. So it's a rachmanis on that guy. It's really sad. But I think it's also a powerful lesson, a very powerful lesson. And that is brought out by the Rambam at the beginning of the third parak of Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam says as follows. Person who has more mitzvos than averos, tzaddik. That person is a tzaddik. That's a righteous person. Conversely, someone whose averos are greater than his averos are greater than his mitzvos, rasha. So what does this Rambam mean? You have one small mitzvah, more than your averos, one tiny mitzvah, more than your averos, you're a tzaddik. Conversely, you have one avera more than the mitzvahs that you have, that person's considered a rasha. That's an evil person. But the Rambam goes further. He says, v'chema medinos, the same thing applies, the same calculation applies not just by individuals, but also by countries. So on Yom Kippur, Hashem doesn't just weigh your mitzvahs and your averas on a scale. He heaps on all the mitzvahs of America on one side, and all the averas of America on the other side, and if it's slight, infinitesimally, if America has one little, tiny mitzvah, more than America's collective averos, America is considered a tzaddik, a righteous country. Conversely, one little extra avera is considered a rasha. But that's not enough. The Rambam says, v'chein ha'olam kulo. So the entire world works with this system. Hashem on Yom Kippur, next Shabbos, is going to weigh the entire world and heap all of its mitzvahs, collective mitzvahs on one side, and all of its collective averus on the other side, and So imagine it's really close. As close as it could possibly be. And you did the one extra tiny, we're not talking about big mitzvah, like you saved somebody's life or something like that. You did one little mitzvah, and that makes a difference. The whole world are tzaddikim. The world is a tzaddik because of you. One person's actions. And conversely with averos. It's an amazing idea. One person's actions. I think that's what the blackout in San Diego taught us. One person's actions are vital. Really important. That's why Hashem was telling us. See, one person pulls one little piece out of a station in Yuma, and boom, millions of people blacked out. Okay, we got the power on a little later. But imagine the cosmic effect, the catastrophic, for good or bad, effect, and you do that mitzvah that puts everything over. A small mitzvah. One little part. Amazing. I think that's a tzir chushi. All these are graphic illustrations of some ideas from technology that we can really grab onto, that we can really relate to. Lesson number 7, the last one, is smartphones. Going back to smartphones. I remember, I know this sounds like prehistoric history, maybe some of you remember this, that there was a time when I did not have a phone or a pager. I know it's ancient history, it's all the way back there in the annals of history. It's like really way back there, like before Art Scroll, you know, it's like really back there. So recently, all of us have to go through various stages in life. So our contract with our cell phone company was up. So we had to re-up, and they gave us new phones. So we all know one of the challenges today is if you get a new phone, you almost have to get a smartphone. So I realized, amongst other things, is with my old phone, when I charged my old phone, so I charged it, and it stayed charged till the next Yovel. It stayed charged for 7, 8, 10, or 50 years, something like that. But with a smartphone, so I charge it, and I saw by the time Mincha rolled around, a thing pops up and says, your phone is about to die and your existence is going to end. Right? You know, like something like that. So I had to recharge my phone, and I had to leave my phone at home. So I was leaving for Mincha, and I told my wife, I told Debbie, you know, I have to leave my phone here because that new phone, the battery's already dead, and I have to recharge it. So my wife said to me, but I won't be able to contact you. I won't be able to contact you. I'm going to Mincha Maariv. So how long is it? It's an hour and a half. And you all know where I live, 3 blocks away, right? It doesn't seem to be end of a life type of situation. But that's the way people feel today. I'm sure all of you think. Maybe it happened to you once. Do you ever leave your cell phone somewhere? Leave your cell phone at home? Right? No, it's never happened. It's attached surgically to your foot. But I know many people, I'm sure all of you feel this way, is you live around here, and you're going to Walgreens, and you left your cell phone. Right? So you come to Walgreens, I left my cell phone at home. Oh no, what's going to happen? The world's going to come to an end, right? Maybe they're going to call me right at that time. You know, we want you to become president of the United States. You missed the call. You missed the call. Right? A terrible thing. I mean, you feel lost if you leave without your cell phone. There's an expectation now. An expectation that we have to constantly be in touch. Constantly. I know, this affects me. I mean, I try as hard as I can, but people call. I remember in the old days, so again, before cell phones, if you can imagine that. So I tell the story that I came home from shul once, and my wife looked a little flustered. So I said, what happened? So she said, well, you were gone, you got a phone call. I said, what happened? So she said, I answered the phone, And somebody asked for you, is Rabbi Summers home? My wife said, no, I'm sorry, he's not home right now. He's at shul for Minchas Maariv. The person on the other line said, okay, I'll call back later. My wife said, who is this? Can I ask who is this? He said, yeah, this is Shmuel Kamenetsky. So my wife said, okay, Shmuel Kamenetsky, the reshiva from Philadelphia? And he said, yeah, I'm calling about a shidduch, which is an amazing concept in and of itself, which we're not going to discuss now. But that's what makes a gadol hador. So he was calling about a shidduch, and he thought I had information about the other side, so he wanted to speak to me. So my wife said, well, let me take the reshiva's number. My husband will call as soon as he gets back. So he said, no, 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 your husband is a shul rabbi. I'm sure he's very busy. I'll call him back. So, I mean, he's a gadol hador, so when I call him back, I mentioned that years later I met him at Mlava Malka, and I went up to say gudvach to him, and I said, my name is Yitzchok, and he said, yeah, Rabbi Summers, I called you about that shidduch. Maybe I forgot to call back. But, you know, in those days, if you called back, it wasn't that long ago, called back an hour later, 2 hours later, maybe even a day later, somebody was grateful. Now, if you don't call back somebody in 5 minutes, Rabbi Summers hates me, he doesn't want me in the shul, he wants me to move to the valley, and all these, I didn't call you back within 5 minutes. That's the expectation. You have to constantly be in touch. I think this is a very important lesson for us. And that is the lesson is that we have to constantly be in touch with Hashem. We always have to be in touch with Hashem. And we can be constantly in touch with Hashem. We all know that's why Chazal say, Racha HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'zakas HaYisrael, L'fichach Hirbam Torah Mitzvos. Hashem gave us a lot of mitzvos. A tremendous amount of mitzvos. So, you know, to a little kid you say, Hashem loves us so much, He gave us a lot of mitzvos. So the teenager will say, don't love me so much, right? Don't give me so many mitzvos. But we know that the answer is that Hashem wants us to be in touch. Hashem wants us constantly to have access to Him. And the way we have access to Him is through the vehicle of mitzvos. So Hashem wants us to constantly be in touch. He doesn't want us to leave our cell phone, our spiritual cell phone, at home. He wants us to constantly be in touch. So that's why we have so many mitzvos. And if you freak out about leaving your cell phone at home, you should really think about how about when you leave your spiritual cell phone at home, when you're not in touch with Hashem. We're lucky. We're Klal Yisrael. We're lucky that we constantly can be in touch with Hashem every moment of the day. And that's, I think, a very important lesson that we learn from staying in touch with a cell phone. So as I began, it might be difficult for us to relate to some of the king lion parables, but Hashem gives us, as the Chofetz Chaim laid out for us, ways that today we can, with modern technology, relate to what we're supposed to be doing during this time of year. We have a week, just a few precious days to come closer to Hashem till we approach Him on Yom Kippur. So these are some of the ideas that we have to bear in mind. We have to think about how we send, do something, it's done. Just like we learned by email. The idea of a smartphone that they have everything on a smartphone. Everything is recorded. We have to remember that we are constantly downloading things and think about what effect it has on us when we download things. We have to think about texting, how we get fatumal in our minds and we just can't think anymore. We have to think about barcodes, that a little thing, a little line, microscopic, can make a very big difference. How much a person, a single person, has an effect on everyone. That's what we learned from the blackout. And again, to constantly be in communication, constantly be in touch with Hashem. Hopefully with some of these parables and lessons, we should use, instead of technology being a detriment to our spiritual growth, hopefully we will use these lessons to come closer to Hashem. And hopefully all of us will be blessed with a good Ben Shior, will come closer to Hashem, will be blessed with all the blessings, all the tremendous sorrows and troubles and problems which are confronting us will be wiped away by each and every single one of us. Each and every single one of us makes a very big difference coming closer to Hashem and using these tools properly as Hashem means them to be used. Thank you very much. Good luck.